Chapter 15. The fairy palaces burst into illumination. Before pale morning showed the monstrous serpents of smoke trailing themselves over Coketown. A clattering of clogs upon the pavement, a rapid ringing of bells, and all the melancholy mad elephants, polished and oiled up for the day's monotony, were at their heavy exercise again. Stephen bent over his loom, quiet, watchful, and steady. A special contrast, as every man was in the forest of looms where Stephen worked, to the crashing, smashing, tearing piece of mechanism at which he labored. Never fear, good people of an anxious turn of mind, that art will consign nature to oblivion. Set anywhere, side by side, the work of God and the work of man, and the former, even though it be a troop of hands of very small account, will gain in dignity from the comparison. So many hundred hands in this mill, so many hundred horse steam power. It is known, to the force of a single pound weight, what the engine will do, but, not all the calculators of the national debt can tell me the capacity for good or evil, for love or hatred, for patriotism or discontent, for the decomposition of virtue into vice, or the reverse, at any single moment in the soul of one of these its quiet servants, with the composed faces and the regulated actions. There is no mystery in it, there is an unfathomable mystery in the meanest of them, forever. Supposing we were to reverse our arithmetic for material objects, and to govern these awful unknown quantities by other means. The day grew strong, and showed itself outside, even against the flaming lights within. The lights were turned out, and the work went on. The rain fell, and the smoke serpents, submissive to the curse of all that tribe, trailed themselves upon the earth. In the waste yard outside, the steam from the escape pipe, the litter of barrels and old iron, the shining heaps of coals, the ashes everywhere, were shrouded in a veil of mist and rain. The work went on, until the noon bell rang. More clattering upon the pavements. The looms, and wheels, and hands all out of gear for an hour. Stephen came out of the hot mill into the damp wind and cold wet streets, haggard and worn. He turned from his own class and his own quarter, taking nothing but a little bread as he walked along, towards the hill on which his principal employer lived, in a red house with black outside shutters, green inside blinds, a black street door, up two white steps, Bounderby in letters very like himself, upon a brazen plate, and a round brazen door handle underneath it, like a brazen full stop. Mr. Bounderby was at his lunch. So Stephen had expected. Would his servant say that one of the hands begged leave to speak to him? Message in return, requiring name of such hand. Stephen Blackpool. There was nothing troublesome against Stephen Blackpool. Yes, he might come in. Stephen Blackpool in the parlor. Mr. Bounderby, whom he just knew by sight, at lunch on chop and sherry. Mrs. Sparsit netting at the fireside, in a side saddle attitude, with one foot in a cotton stirrup. It was a part, at once of Mrs. Sparsit's dignity and service, not to lunch. She supervised the meal officially, but implied that in her own stately person she considered lunch a weakness. Now, Stephen, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, what's the matter with you? Apostrophe, Stephen made a bow. Not a servile one, these hands will never do that. Lord bless you, sir, you'll never catch them at that, if they have been with you 20 years. And, as a complimentary toilet for Mrs. Sparsit, tucked his neckerchief ends into his waistcoat. Now, you know, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, taking some sherry, we have never had any difficulty with you, and you have never been one of the unreasonable ones. You don't expect to be set up in a coach and six, and to be fed on turtle soup and venison, with a gold spoon, as a good many of 'em do. Apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Bounderby always represented this to be the sole, immediate, and direct object of any hand who was not entirely satisfied. And therefore I know already, that you have not come here to make a complaint. Now, you know, I am certain of that, beforehand. apostrophe, no, sir, sure I am not coom for no O.T.H. kind. Apostrophe, Mr. Bounderby seemed agreeably surprised, notwithstanding his previous strong conviction. Very well, apostrophe he returned. Here a steady hand, and I was not mistaken. Now, let me hear what it's all about. As it's not that, let me hear what it is. What have you got to say? Out with it, lad. Apostrophe, Stephen happened to glance towards Mrs. Sparsit. I can go, Mr. Bounderby, if you wish it, apostrophe said that self-sacrificing lady, making a feint of taking her foot out of the stirrup. Mr. Bounderby stayed her, by holding a mouthful of chop in suspension before swallowing it, and putting out his left hand. Then, withdrawing his hand and swallowing his mouthful of chop, he said to Stephen, Now you know, this good lady is a born lady, a high lady. You are not to suppose, because she keeps my house for me, that she hasn't been very high up the tree, up at the top of the tree. Now, if you have got anything to say that can't be said before a born lady, this lady will leave the room. If what you have got to say can be said before a born lady, this lady will stay where she is. Apostrophe, sir, I hope I never had note to say, not fitten for a born lady to hear, sin I were born myson, apostrophe was the reply, accompanied with a slight flush. Very well, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, pushing away his plate, and leaning back. Fire away. Apostrophe, I ha coom, apostrophe Stephen began, raising his eyes from the floor, after a moment's consideration. To ask yo your advice. I need tea over much. I were married on Easter Monday 19 years in, long, and three. She were a young lass pretty and a why good accounts of her son. Well, she went bad soon. Not along of me. God knows I were not a unkind husband to her. Apostrophe, I have heard all this before, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby. She took to drinking, left off working, sold the furniture, pawned the clothes, and played old gooseberry. Apostrophe, I were patient, why her? Apostrophe, the more fool you, I think, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, in confidence to his wine glass. I were very patient, why her? I tried to wean her frotty o'er and o'er again. I tried this, I tried that, I tried t'other. I ha gone home, many's the time, and found all vanished as I had in the world, and her without a sense left to bless her soul lying on bare ground. I ha done tea not once, not twice 20 times. Apostrophe, every line in his face deepened as he said it, and put in its affecting evidence of the suffering he had undergone. From bad to worse, from worse to worsen. She left me. She disgraced her soul every ways. Bitter and bad. She coom back, she coom back, she coom back. What could I do to hinder her? I ha walked the streets nights long, ere ever I'd go home. I ha gone TTH Brig, minded to fling my soul o'er, and ha no more on't. I ha bore that much, that I were out when I were young. Apostrophe, Mrs. Sparsit, easily ambling along with her netting needles, raised the Carolanian eyebrows, and shook her head, as much as to say, the great no trouble as well as the small. Please to turn your humble eye in my direction. Apostrophe, I ha paid her to keep awa from me. These 5 year I ha paid her. I ha gotten decent futrals about me again. I ha lived hard and sad, but not ashamed, and fearful a the minutes o' my life. Last night, I went home. There she lay upon my hearthstone. There she is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in the strength of his misfortune, and the energy of his distress, he fired for the moment like a proud man. In another moment, he stood as he had stood all the time his usual stoop upon him. His pondering face addressed to Mr. Bounderby, with a curious expression on it, half shrewd, half perplexed, as if his mind were set upon unraveling something very difficult. His hat held tight in his left hand, which rested on his hip, his right arm, with a rugged propriety and force of action, very earnestly emphasizing what he said. Not least so when it all was paused, a little bent, but not withdrawn, as he paused. I was acquainted with all this, you know, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, except the last clause, long ago. It's a bad job, that's what it is. You had better have been satisfied as you were, and not have got married. However, it's too late to say that. Apostrophe, was it an unequal marriage, sir, in point of years? Apostrophe asked Mrs. Sparsit. You hear what this lady asks. Was it an unequal marriage in point of years, this unlucky job of yours? Apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby. Not an so. I were 21 myson, she were 20 nibet. Apostrophe, indeed, sir. Apostrophe said Mrs. Sparsit to her chief, with great placidity. I inferred, from its being so miserable a marriage, that it was probably an unequal one in point of years. Apostrophe, Mr. Bounderby looked very hard at the good lady in a sidelong way, that had an odd sheepishness about it. He fortified himself with a little more sherry. Well, why don't you go on? Apostrophe he then asked, turning rather irritably on Stephen Blackpool. I ha come to ask yo, sir, how I am to be rid of this woman. Apostrophe Stephen infused a yet deeper gravity into the mixed expression of his attentive face. Mrs. Sparsit uttered a gentle ejaculation, as having received a moral shock. What do you mean? Apostrophe said Bounderby, getting up to lean his back against the chimney piece. What are you talking about? You took her for better for worse. Apostrophe, I mun, be ridden o' her. I cannot bear tea no more. I ha lived under tea so long, for that I ha had the pity and comfort in words o'th best lass living or dead. Happily, but for her, I should ha gone battering mad. Apostrophe, he wishes to be free, to marry the female of whom he speaks, I fear, sir, apostrophe observed Mrs. Sparsit in an undertone, and much dejected by the immorality of the people. I do. The lady says what's right. I do. I were a coming to T.I.R.E.D.I.T.H. papers that great folk fair fam a. I wishes em no hurt. Are not bonded together for better for worse so fast, but that they can be set free fro their misfortunate marriages, and marry o'er again. When they dunnot agree, for that their tempers is ill-sorted, they has rooms o' one kind and another in their houses, above a bit, and they can live asunders. We fuck ha only one room, and we can't. When that won't do, they hog out another cash, and they can say this for yo and that for me, and they can go their separate ways. We can't. Spite o' all that, they can be set free for smaller wrongs than mine. So, I mun be ridden o' this woman, and I want tea know how? Apostrophe, know how, apostrophe returned Mr. Bounderby. If I do her any hurt, sir, there's a law to punish me? Apostrophe, of course there is. Apostrophe, if I flee from her, there's a law to punish me? Apostrophe, of course there is. Apostrophe, if I marry to her dear lass, there's a law to punish me? Apostrophe, of course there is. Apostrophe, if I was to live wi her, and not marry her saying such a thing could be, which it never could or would, and her so good there's a law to punish me, in every innocent child belonging to me. Apostrophe, of course there is. Apostrophe, now, a God's name, apostrophe said Stephen Blackpool, show me the law to help me. Apostrophe, hem. There's a sanctity in this relation of life, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, and it must be kept up. Apostrophe, no, dunnot say that, sir. Tan't kept up that way. Not that way. Tis kept down that way. I'm a weaver, I were in a factory when they chilled, but I ha got mean, to see why and yearn to hear why. I read in TH papers every sizes, every sessions and you read too I know it. With dismay how th supposed impossibility o ever getting unchained from one another, at any price, on any terms, brings blood upon this land, and brings many common married folk to battle, murder, and sudden death. Let us ha this, right understood. Mine's a grievous case, and I want, if yo will be so good to know the law that helps me. Apostrophe, now, I tell you what. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Bounderby, putting his hands in his pockets. There is such a law. Apostrophe, Stephen, subsiding into his quiet manner, and never wandering in his attention, gave a nod. But it's not for you at all. It costs money. It costs a mint of money. Apostrophe, how much might that be? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Stephen calmly asked. Why, you'd have to go to Doctors' Commons with a suit, and you'd have to go to a court of common law with a suit, and you'd have to go to the House of Lords with a suit, and you'd have to get an Act of Parliament to enable you to marry again, and it would cost you, if it was a case of very plain sailing, I suppose from £1,000 to £1,500, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby. Perhaps twice the money. Apostrophe, there's no other law? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly not. Apostrophe, why then, sir, apostrophe said Stephen, turning white, and motioning with that right hand of his, as if he gave everything to the four winds, 'tis a muddle. 'Tis just a muddle adagither, and the sooner I am dead, the better. Apostrophe, Mrs. Sparsit again dejected by the impiety of the people. Pooh, pooh. Don't you talk nonsense, my good fellow, apostrophe said Mr. Bounderby, about things you don't understand. And don't you call the institutions of your country a muddle, or you'll get yourself into a real muddle one of these fine mornings. The institutions of your country are not your piecework, and the only thing you have got to do is to mind your piecework. You didn't take your wife for fast and for loose, but for better for worse. If she has turned out worse, why, all we have got to say is, she might have turned out better. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.